Welcome to episode 6 of Comic Pop Library. This week we'll be discussing Liar's Kiss, Batman and Robin, Batman Reborn, and Beast of Burden.
I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's so.
First off, I would like to do a little house cleaning. I apologize. Venus is no longer going to be with us until she can get back up to full health. Her conditions are such a way that she's unable to do the podcast right now. All of us here, I'm sure, wish her well and well wishes to get a full recovery. And when she's willing and able to return, we will gladly have her back. The other little house cleaning I have is last week, Mickey asked about the free comic book day and how to order. I did call comic book distributors. Excuse me, I can't even talk today. Diamond Comic Book Distributors. And I talked to Shannon or Sharon. I was being a flake and forgot to write her name down. But I did ask her if libraries were able to order from Diamond for the free comic book day issues. Unfortunately, she said at this time, libraries cannot order them straight from Diamond. They do have to work with their local retailers. So I know that puts a strain on some libraries, but if you want to participate next year, contact your local area comic book store and try to make arrangements so you can get the comic books in on time for the actual event, and I'm sure they will try to work with you as much as they can. First up today, we have Liar's Kiss, and Royce, take it away.
The book that I'm reviewing this week is called Liar's Kiss. It's by Eric Skillman and Yomar Soriano. And it's, you know, for those who have listened into previous podcasts that we've done, you'll know that I have kind of a penchant for crime noir type books. And this one goes along in that same kind of vein as well. It's put out by Top Shelf Productions. It's a basic story of a gumshoe detective who helps try to solve a crime in which one of his clients has been involved. And without giving too much away, it's one of the few stories that I've read in a long time where I was actually surprised by the ending. Usually when you read these types of books, it follows a very familiar pattern of going from A to B to C to D, and then it's over. And so this is really quite a nice surprise to get to the end and realize the unexpected is really what happened. One of the beautiful things about this story that I felt was kind of approaches it from a couple of different angles. You know, you have not only the detective, but then you also have, not detective, private investigator, I'm sorry. But then you also have, you know, the police angle, and then there's the company angle. The basic story starts off with a rich businessman who's recently been found dead in his house, and his wife has been framed. As you find out early in the story, the detective and the wife have been having an illicit love affair and have been faking photos to make it look like she has been home all the time when she's been out and about having fun. And so that's kind of what sets the story up, is the fact that they have these photos that say that she was there at the exact same time of the crime. So that's kind of where it kicks off, and it takes its own road from there. The artwork in this I thought was really nice. It's typical of these kind of crime noir stories. It's done in black and white, so it's done very nicely. And the packaging is really nice as well. In terms of reads, I thought it was a really quick, brief read, and definitely something for someone who likes crime fiction. This is something I'd highly recommend.
This is pretty much kind of like in the vein of your other crime,
this looking at the, you know, if someone said that they liked Criminal or something along those lines, anything from the Vertigo crime series, this book would be right along in that kind of progression. It doesn't do anything extraordinary, outstanding to the genre, but it's something that just fits nicely in with those type of books.
And I looked at some of the artwork online, and it looks to me like it was a little bit darker shading. It's been a while since I looked at it, so you have to remind me.
No, there's it kind of goes from, you know, like I don't want to say normal pen and ink, but it goes kind of from a pen and ink style on some pages, and then there's some areas where it looks like it's been done with some watercolors.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's, I wouldn't say that it's dark. It just, you know, it's one of those things with these type of stories where you just kind of forget what you're seeing with your eyes as you're reading the story. I didn't really notice that the first couple of times that I've read it.
It's a more mature title again, like most of the crime noirs. I think you mentioned that already.
See, I'm desensitized to that type of stuff. I don't know if there's anything in there. I mean, those are the kinds of things that I look for when I'm reading.
Oh!
Those. So I don't, you know, I would have to go back and leaf through it page by page to see if there was anything in there. But yeah, I would guess that this is a story that would be more appealing to maybe older teens, definitely young adults, definitely a crowd who is used to reading mysteries. This might be something that they might find interesting. It's hard to say.
Miggy's over there being awful quiet. He must be taking a nap. Did we lose him?
I'm here. I'm just muted.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I get scared sometimes. I don't want to be alone. Did you glance at this or any questions for Royce, Mickey?
No, I'm sorry. Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I didn't get to look at this one. I like the crime series, and Royce and I share that kind of enjoyment of the noir genre, so I'm looking forward to reading it, but I haven't.
Royce, do you know why it's so hard to get a hold of?
No, I don't. You know, I went to my local comic shop on, you know, Wednesday, and it was just laying out, and I bought it. So, you know, in terms of availability, I have no idea. Maybe it's the publisher, Top Shelf. I have no idea. I know the new town I live in, you know, their selection of comics runs from DC to Marvel, and that's it. Being a alternate publisher might have something to do with it, but I have no idea.
I just know when I looked on the interlibrary loan system, there was not anything available. So.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's really a good way to judge on whether something is hard to get or not.
Well, I think they can probably purchase it, but if they want to test it out to see if they want it in their library, a lot of times I suggest the interlibrary loan if they don't want to purchase it straight up.
True. Well, this one will be available on interlibrary loan here in the state of Kansas, and I can't speak for being able to get it from the Tonganoxie Public Library in Kansas outside of the state.
Yeah, so we need a comment on Roy's on a congratulations. He made a move from the Tonganoxie Public Library, and now he's at the Washburn University at, what's the library's name there, Royce?
It's the Mabee Library, M-A-B-E-E Library in Topeka, Kansas.
So a hearty congratulations to you, sir. He's going to get all dignified on us now.
Sure. Of course. So, you know, it's a change. You know, so I'm a big proponent of change.
Unless there's anything else that you want to comment on, Royce?
No, you know, I think it's funny is I think I end each of my reviews each week saying that I think I might read something different than crime noir, and I don't think it's going to happen. You know, it's just a genre that I'm really comfortable with, and I just kind of like the stylings of it. It's just one of those things that when I sit and I think about stories in my head, they always just kind of fit into this type of genre. It's just something I'm really fond of, so...
Well, I'll try to.
So that'll probably be what I talk about next time.
I'll try to keep it mixed up for you then.
I'd like to thank one of our sponsors at this time, Music Alley from Mivio. Check it out at music.mivio.com. That is MUSIC.MEVIO.com. Or you can go to our site, Comic Pop Library, for links to Music Alley and our reference links located within our left navigation bar. And now, back to the show.
Next up, we have Richard with Batman and Robin, Batman Reborn. This book was written by Grant Morrison. artwork by half of the book is by Frank Quitely and the other half by Philip Tan. And if most people are familiar with Grant Morrison, he's a writer that likes to write about fantastical stories with fantastical characters. And they're not necessarily always the most pleasant of fantastical characters. They can be a little disturbing as well. And with Frank Quitely really doing the first arc of this, it's definitely a little disturbing. We have events taking place right after Final Crisis where Batman or Bruce Wayne has disappeared. The Nightwing character, which was the first Robin, Dick Grayson, has decided to take up the Batman's mantle. And instead of Tim Drake filling in as Robin, he is now Red Robin, and they have Damian Wayne coming in as the new Robin with Dick Grayson. And he is Bruce's son by way of Talia al Ghul. And most of you will know Al Ghul by Ra's al Ghul. Talia was his daughter. The story picks up with the odd couple, the squeaky clean Dick Grayson, and the Damian Wayne, who was brought up by the Assassin's League that is run by Talia. So basically his whole life has been training to become an assassin, but he wants to learn from his father now, who is unfortunately absent, and hesitantly agrees to follow Dick Grayson as the Batman, but it's not a comfortable relationship. He is definitely testing Dick and questions him every step of the way. The characters in the first arc, which is Batman Reborn, it's centered around some circus people, and then we get into the main villain. His name is Pig. He's basically dressed up like a butcher, has a pig's mask on his face, and we never actually see his true face. And one of his sticks is he likes to take these lifelike masks and basically adhere them to the faces of individuals, whether they're female, male, young, old, and he calls them his dollies because he can control them. And of course, mayhem ensues. And I love, you get a flair of how Damon's a little bit different as the Robin character, because the circus people attack the police station where one of their people is being held, and they don't want them to rat out where Pig's at. And one of them's a giant lady. Damian has got her cornered in a hallway, I assume, basement area, and he's got a bucket over her head, and he is just welling away at her head trying to get information out of her. So it's a big departure from the past Robins that we've had. Just a skip ahead to the second arc. This is called Revenge of the Red Hood. For those of you who are not sure, Jason Todd, who was the second Robin, is now the Red Hood. He's kind of an anti-villain in the Batman universe now. He has taken on one of the dollies from the actual first story arc from Pig. One of the dolls survived, who was Scarlet, who didn't have the full mind control, and she is now Red Hood's sidekick. They have a character named Flamingo who comes into town because Red Hood is branded justice, is using weapons. He's fine with killing the criminals almost. You know, he has no regard for that. He thinks Bruce was too soft, so he's making it a little bit more severe. If you're a criminal, you will pay. And this attracts the attention of a cartel member down in South America, and he sends up an assassin to take out Batman and Jason Todd as Red Hood and all that, with one of the more outlandish characters I've seen in a Batman title called Flamingo. And this gentleman, he's private Learjet is in pink, his vehicle is pink, which is a motorcycle, his uniform is pink, and for a Batman title, that is kind of unusual, having a character all dressed up in pink. Pink is how that is all soft and everything. The character itself is ultra-violent. He's kind of desensitized to violence and being harmed by anything. And one of the hooks for this character is that when he kills his victims, he eats their faces. He peels them off and eats them. And one of the panels has a nice little peeled face on a platter with blood splatters around it. And you see him with a knife and fork getting ready to chow down. It's definitely fantastical characters, but not the lighthearted fantastical. It's definitely the darker side of the fantasy genre. With Frank Quitely with his artwork, he, to me, has a visceral type artwork. It's very gritty to me when I see it. Philip Tan kind of carried that forward, but you could tell that his was a little bit more stylized. But he did try to keep the same tone that Frank Quitely set in the first part of the book. What I was reviewing is actually the trade paperback. They do have it in hardback. if you so desire to have the hardback. But to save a little bit of the library's funds, and I know all librarians try to do this from time to time, is try to find something a little bit cheaper. So if you waited long enough, you could have got this in trade paperback. That is the quick rundown of Batman and Robin, Batman Reborn. This is definitely geared for probably a sophomore, maybe freshman, sophomore level, and up. Middle school, I think the librarian or parents would probably look at it a little bit and see that how violent it is and have to consider the individual student's maturity reading level. Younger than that would probably be questionable. This is one that it was so outlandish that I did enjoy it, but I don't know if I could take a steady diet of this constantly. And I don't know if this continues on with the Batman and Robin title or not. For this trade paperback, I did enjoy it. If you're interested, hop on out and buy Batman and Robin.
This book, for me, it's okay. You know, I like Batman and Robin a lot. And I specifically try to read as many Batman titles as I can. This one was okay. There's some things in there that, you know, kind of make me laugh. You know, this Red Hood character. It just the way it's drawn, it just takes some getting used to it. You know, it's like, what is this exactly? What is this? And some of the characters, you know, I think are kind of amusing, this Flamingo character. But for the most part, you know, I don't know. I guess in terms of the superhero stuff, I guess I'm just into different stuff right now. So for me, it just didn't really hit me quite as much as a new Batman usually does. You know, it just didn't really hit me that hard. It was nice, and I like some of the artwork in it. And definitely the Frank Quitely stuff I like a little bit more than the Philip Tan stuff. Yeah, for the most part, it was, when I was done, I was like, okay, I read it. I finished my homework for the week. So that's kind of how I approached it. But I could see, you know, the Batman and Robin readers that I know, they would read it. But I would definitely probably get some mixed reactions on what they thought of it.
Definitely. Like I said, Morrison has a little bit of a twisted mind. His storytelling's definitely unique. I haven't read everything by him, but everything that he usually writes has
There's something wrong with him. You know?
Have you ever seen his picture?
You know, there's something wrong with the guy. I think he just summed up quite like that.
Isn't Morrison the one that has the full beard and long hair? If I remember right, a picture of him that I saw a couple years ago.
No, you're thinking of Alan Moore.
Was that Alan Moore?
Grant Morrison is bald as a bean. He's thin, he's Scottish, he's tall, and he's bald.
My bad, got them mixed up. But I don't know what this one is. It's definitely, you know, for me, I'm a Batman and Robin reader. And this one was definitely a change of pace. I would probably agree with you, Royce. It's not something that I'm used to in Batman and Robin, but it was kind of a nice different change of flavor. I don't know if I would like reading Grant Morrison Batman all the time. I mean, even his RIP was kind of a little out there as well. But it was beautifully drawn. I think it wasn't Jim Lee that drew that. And I've always liked Jim Lee.
Well, I'd like to see the Batman character actually get back to the point where Bruce Wayne is Batman. Yes. And maybe it's just something that we should expect now from the Batman characters. There's never going to be anything like what he used to be like, which is just the normal crime fighter.
Right.
And you know, now it's always going to be this kind of mixture of weirdness.
And we might be getting that back. You know, they're... With DC, what they're doing in September, they're going to changing up all their characters and starting with the number one issues again. I know Bruce Wayne will be back as Batman, and in the Batman and Robin title will be Bruce Wayne and Damian. They actually have Dick Grayson back as Nightwing, so I enjoyed it when it was Detective Comics and Detective Stories. He was solving a case, and that's where I really enjoyed the Batman character. But it's nice to have a little bit of divergence every so often. So if anybody's interested in that, that will be classified probably as mid-teen and up. Younger teens, you might want to look at it a little bit. If you're interested in the Batman and Robin characters, they might have an interest within your library. Next up, we have Mickey with Beasts of Burden, Animal Rights.
A
Thanks, Richard. The novel I'm going to talk about today is called Beasts of Burden, Animal Rights, and it is a collection, a hardback collection, from Dark Horse, which is an independent publisher, largely creator-owned titles. This is by Evan Dorkin, the writer, and Jill Thompson, who is the artist. She paints in watercolors, and the reason this is called Beasts of Burden is because the story concerns a group of dogs. And it is a funny animal story. It goes all the way back to the beginning roots of comics, dealing with a group of talking animals, but it's different in the sense that it's got a new spin on it. This is basically a supernatural fantasy horror series, which uses this group of animals, talking animals, friends, dogs and cats, to solve supernatural crimes and to discover why certain things are going on, some inexplicable and horrible events in this suburban neighborhood where they all reside. You basically have a group of dogs and cats who fight these supernatural threats around their little community, which is called Burden Hill, which is where you get the name Beasts of Burden. It's an Eisner-winning series. It's been extremely well thought of. It actually is about 7-8 years old now. The characters were first introduced in a short story, which came out in 2003, in another hardback collection called The Dark Horse Book of Hauntings, which is an excellent value, by the way. Dark Horse has this habit of putting out hardback books at really soft cover prices, and they're really beautifully done. At any rate, this group of animals then are five dogs: Ace, Rex, Jack, Whitey, and Pug, and a cat named Orphan. And there are other cats brought into the series later on, particularly a witch's familiar, a cat named Dimphna, that comes in to stir up some trouble. And the group is often consulting with other animals, particularly a group of or selected older dogs in particular, who are known as sort of elders of the animal community. And they're often given some guidance when they're not sure what to do. The short stories themselves are collected here in this hardcover book, and the miniseries that came out in 2007 are also collected here. So you've got a lot of different stories dealing with these animals, and you get to know them really well. I think the writing is superb. I love it. I think it's great. I'm an animal lover, and I think that the stories are somehow able to walk that sort of magic line that, you know, maybe Aesop's Fables started way back when, where you have animals behaving like humans with human words and things coming out of their mouths, but still clearly behaving as though they were animals, cats and dogs. So you have that kind of duality there between the characters. That's really charming. And then you've got Jill Thompson, who is a brilliant, brilliant artist and watercolorist, and she's painted the entire series with watercolors. She is one of my favorite artists and storytellers of all time, and I love all her stuff, her all-ages stuff, like Scary Godmother and Magic Trixie, but this is really something else. I think she's done herself. She obviously is an animal lover, certainly someone who has observed animals, and she's able to capture the way that animals' faces sort of mimic or we anthropomorphize animals, actually, but we put our emotions and our values onto animals, and she's able to somehow capture that and show so many human emotions on animal faces, but still make them almost photorealistic in many places. She's just a remarkable thing to do, and I love the way she's painted the animals. I love the way the storytelling progresses. To me, it's one of the absolute pinnacles of this kind of genre, this kind of bent genre, because it really does have a great writer. All the stories are absolutely top-notch, and a really great artist combining to create a story that you couldn't get anywhere else. So with this collection of stories in Beasts of Burden, Animal Rights, you've got a beautiful package, a hardcover book of 184 pages for under $20. It's incredible value. All color, beautiful watercolors, for which, by the way, Jill Thompson has won numerous Eisner Awards. The series itself won an Eisner for both Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson. So it's very well thought of in the artist and creator community. It is not, definitely not, an all-ages book. Some of the supernatural and horror elements get kind of gruesome. I would not recommend this for children. I would certainly think that you would want maybe teens and above to read this one. My cat likes it, you can tell. You can probably hear her. And she is someone who has impeccable taste. So I recommend it to you highly. By the way, I need to tell you this. It just was announced early this month that the title's been optioned for a movie. Richard, I know you're a big movie fan. Yeah, the Shrek and Chronicles of Narnia guy, what's his name? Andrew Adamson is going to be directing. It's going to be a CG-based movie. It's not going to be live action, but he is going to direct it. And I'm really pleased that somebody optioned this because it is a really fantastic property. And I think if they do it well, it's going to translate beautifully to the screen.
And how are they going to market that, though?
Well, you know, I think in this day of you know, really bad superhero movies, this might be one of those sleeper hits.
Yeah, but like you said, how would you market, like on the next one of the stories, Let Sleeping Dogs Lie, you turn it, and first panel, you have some inserts, and it's dogs that's been run over and missing an eye, flies all over it. How are you going to try to fight for little ones?
It's not for little ones. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
It's not an all ages content. This isn't what it's about. So I don't have to worry about that. That's not my job to make it a saleable commodity. All I care about is that I hope they retain the integrity of it, because it really, I mean, you know, the whole reason that you have this kind of an adult fantasy genre is that you can tell things about people using animals that you can't anywhere else. Like I said, it's a long tradition.
I agree with you completely. I loved it. If the horror fanatics out there that come to your libraries, if they can get past the animals, these are some decently written horror short stories. I enjoyed all of them. You're probably going to rake me over the coals for this, but I do not care for the art as much as you did. And I think it's just the style. It fits the stories. Don't get me wrong. I love it with the stories. But if I saw this elsewhere, you know, I like the pretty stuff that looks pretty and flashy. I think I mentioned this in one other podcast. It's what I grew up on, so I guess that's what always draws my attention. I love going off to the side, though, with this type of stuff. And I've always said if the artwork fits the stories, it's great, and this one definitely fits the story. I enjoyed it as it's presented here. And I think the best character that I loved, I don't know about you guys, but it was Pugsley.
He's sort of the comic relief of the group, and he's able to act as sort of the a valve for a lot of the humorous comments that the other animals make. And it's nice to have that kind of interaction, though, among all these characters. That's the thing that makes it so accessible right away, is you sort of know who these characters are because you know people like
them. See if you agree with me, but when I first read it, saw the character, all I pictured was Don Rickles for Pugsley. For some reason, I don't know why. Just his comebacks, and he's a little degrading to a little bit, but not to the point where it's hurtful or harmful. You can tell that part of it's in jest and part of it's serious.
Well, I really enjoyed this book, and I'll have to disagree with you, Richard. I loved the artwork first. The whole reason I picked up this book was the artwork. And then for me, the pleasant surprise was how well written the stories were and how engaging they were. And as a side note, one of the things that I appreciated most about this was it wasn't some fantasy place where these were just animals collected and, you know, they were fighting these paranormal beasts and all this stuff. They were still house pets. So you're running through these stories where they're doing things, and then they'll say things like, I'm okay to do that today. I just have to make sure I'm home before my owner gets home. So there was those kind of moments I thought made it really kind of cute. One of the great things about this book is I had some visitors. A friend of mine from college stopped by with his kids a couple of weeks ago, and his daughter was drawing some manga characters and talking about how much she liked manga.
Oh, you got on to her, didn't you?
Well, you know, she I asked her what she read, if she read any other kind of comics, and it was all specifically manga. And I said, well, you know, I have this Jill Thompson book sitting here, and she had never heard of her. And I was like, why don't you do me a favor? Just take a look at it.
Cool.
And then when we opened it up, she gasped. You know, she was just in love with it. And then the next morning, she came down with her family, and she said, I stayed up the entire night reading this book. And so I converted one Jill Thompson fan that day. But I think there's an appeal to this book. These animals, for me, they're really cute, but the scenes they get into just blow me away. I think it's incredible stuff. You know, Mickey did mention that it was being optioned into a film, it would be nice if they made some of those films with the idea that, hey, maybe this will be just for adults. So I worry a little bit about how much it might get truncated to appeal to little bitty kids. But as it stands on its own as a graphic novel, I think this is one of the best that I've read in a really long time.
Do you think that market might be shifting a little bit with generations after us coming up? Like we said, the manga and anime are kind of in the mainstream now. More kids are watching it and seeing the more mature storylines. My hope is kind of like what you said, Royce, is that, and Mickey, they keep the integrity of the book. They make it for what it is, not try to write it down to the kids. And I'm hoping the American audience is starting to warm up that animation doesn't have to be all kid fare anymore. I don't know if you guys think the same way, that taste might be changing with the video games and the anime.
Well, I take the tack that your bearded friend Alan Moore, that you made reference to earlier, takes, Richard, and that
be nice.
He says that he sees movies and comics as totally unrelated forms, and he personally doesn't care when he sells Watchmen or whatever to the movies. He says, I don't care. I'm done with it. I told the story in a comic book. If somebody wants to pay me a bunch of money and make a movie based on my ideas, I don't care what they do with it. And he says he's never even seen the movie and never will.
For a creator, that would be hard, too, I would think. I mean,
it's not hard for him.
True. Well, I mean, to go see the movie when it's done, I would be like him. I wouldn't want to see it because it's good that he has that attitude that he doesn't get upset and everything.
Well, he has that attitude because he's Alan Moore.
True. That's what I'm hoping for, is the animation doesn't always try to kidify everything. Like, Shrek was kind of a nice blend because you had the humor for the kids, but you also had the humor for the adults that kind of flew over the younger kids' heads.
Well, I take a little bit of issue with that, in the sense that what we're seeing is that passes for humor is just potty humor.
True.
Sex and shit jokes, basically.
Right.
Frankly, it's like, okay, that's enough of that. I'd like to see somebody really treat this story with a little bit more respect and not make the best Morty. Here's a review of Green Lantern that my friend Mike Weaver gave, and he did this on Facebook, and it just cracked me up. He said, Green Lantern, I went to see Green Lantern last night. It was the very best Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie I've ever seen.
No, we might be seeing that tonight. So.
well, we'll have to see if I've contaminated your opinion. That was a funny comment. He said it was the worst movie he's ever sat through.
Well,
he didn't watch Arachnophobia.
Okay. That's calling up an old one there.
Yeah.
Now, is that the one with who is it?
With all the spiders. Shatner?
Yeah, John Goodman was in it.
I'm less like, I want it to be, like you said, Mickey, I want the integrity held. I think the American audience is starting to shift where they're starting to understand that animation can be done seriously, but it's still going to take a little bit of time.
Well, let's hope you're right. It's a great story. Don't you think it would make a really interesting movie to watch?
I would love it as an animated show. I would be there in a heartbeat.
It has all the makings of a show that could be on once a week. It's like the Simpsons or the Family Guy. The characters in here, I think, could be things that people like so much that they'd want to see them constantly. But I think a movie would be great. I'd love to see it.
We had Liar's Kiss from Royce. He says, definitely, if you're the Criminal Norse fan types, definitely jump into this. The Batman and Robin, a little bit mixed. Batman Bombs fans.
Down.
Yeah, it's going to be one that some of them will like and some of them won't. It's going to be a mixed review. Beast of Burden, this is one. I loved it when I read it. It all fit together beautifully. Definitely pick this one up. We will see you on the next go-around.
Thank you, Richard. Sounds good.
Thank you, Richard. Talk to you later.
I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, 'cause it's so.
thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.